If you love the History Extra podcast, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I think it's something that 13% of the blue plaques in London represent women. I think it's less than 3% of the statues in the UK currently represent women who were real historical women, so not a mythological character or a representation of an idea, and weren't royal.
That was Sarah Jackson talking to us about how women in history are remembered today.
You're listening to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine. We're the UK's best-selling history magazine, available in print and several digital formats all over the world. Find out more at historyextra.com/subscribe or look out for us in your digital newsstand or app store.
Hello and welcome to the History Extra podcast. I'm Rob Attar, the editor of BBC History Magazine. Today's interview is with Sarah Jackson, a historian who co-founded the East End Women's Museum. She recently participated in an event at the Institute of Historical Research in London, themed around how historical women are commemorated in public, looking at everything from statues to plaques to banknotes. And Sarah continued on this theme in an interview with our deputy digital editor, Eleanor Evans.
So to start with, I guess it would be great to look at the key differences at this time between historical commemorations of men and women and how they are commemorated and celebrated in public.
Well, I think it's, to be honest, it's just a difference in terms of quantity as much as anything else. There's just a gap. There's a lot of women who are kind of missing from public memorials, from pedestals, streets and public places. I think the statistics are, you may have them in front of you, but I think it's something that 13% of the blue plaques in London represent women. I think it's less than 3% of the statues in the UK currently represent women who were real historical women, so not a mythological character or a representation of an idea, and weren't royal, because obviously there's a few knocking around of Queen Victoria. So there's actually just, there's just a lot of missing women, women missing from pedestals, who achieved extraordinary, noteworthy, statue-worthy things in the past, but haven't made it into those public spaces.
And without wishing to, you know, go down the route of very obvious things, could you talk a little bit about the societal factors that have led to this imbalance?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it bears repeating, because what we found quite often is people sort of because they don't see women's stories and women's voices and experiences represented in museums, in statues and history books, in popular history, sort of TV, they sort of assume women weren't there. Like they all, I don't know, women were out sort of making the tea during the Civil War or, you know, popped up to the shops and missed the Norman Conquest or something like that. But actually, women have been not only witnesses to history, but participants in history and have actually been pioneers, have been in roles that perhaps later became associated only with men. For example, during the First World War, there was a huge craze for women's football, and there were an enormous number of women's football teams that a whole league, you know, throughout the country. And as it became so popular, it was felt necessary to ban it in 1924. So, you know, a lot of people wouldn't necessarily think that and have thought traditionally that women didn't take part in sport or didn't have a history in football. Actually, that's not the case. And I think part of the reason is why they've been forgotten, why kind of women's stories have been sidelined, is partly at the time, you know, there have been sort of additional barriers for women to access the situations and kind of achievements which have typically been recorded in the history books. So, you know, for example, waging a war or inventing a new technological discovery or becoming prime minister, you know, because of the societies have been traditionally more sexist centuries ago, but also in recent history, women have found it more difficult to get into those spaces where the eyes of history are on them, not only through overt discrimination, but also because women are carrying usually an extra burden of kind of the responsibility for housework and childcare, which doesn't tend to go away when women are in kind of public facing roles or kind of working outside their home. They're often doing a double shift of work outside the home and unpaid work inside the home. Then there's also the impact of violence against women. We know that violence against women has a huge impact today. You know, there's women, of course, when they've stepped outside of traditional gender roles, perhaps been perceived as transgressive, they've been at even greater risk of that kind of violence and that kind of backlash. So I think there's sort of reasons that, you know, women haven't made it into those historical spaces at the time. But then there's also been a process of forgetting because history has tended to be written, history books have tended to be written by men, and they've tended to focus on men and, you know, white wealthy men as well. So it's certainly not only women that are missing from our kind of popular idea of history. And there's a lot of work that's been happening for the last few decades, really, sort of women's historians have been working to put those stories back in place, put women's stories back on the pages of our history books. And that's kind of just something we're trying to continue.
And a recent event at the Institution of Historical Research saw several historians discuss campaigns such as that to put Jane Austen's face on the £10 note and the campaign to erect a memorial statue of Millicent Fawcett in London's Parliament Square. If we could talk then about some of those notable campaigns, certainly the campaigns that might have received the most publicity, the campaigns that people might be familiar with.
So I was fortunate enough to be invited to speak at a panel discussion at the Institute of Historical Research, which took place recently, with speakers including Caroline Criado Perez, Rebecca Surrender from the University of Oxford, and Becky Higgett. It was a really interesting event, really well attended, and we had a really fascinating discussion that all the panel seemed to kind of agree about, that we need to explore different forms of commemoration and a recognition that women's history, the nature of women's history, doesn't necessarily lend itself to statues of individuals because perhaps there's something often more collective, more collaborative about how women have worked together.
At the event recently was Caroline Criado Perez, who some listeners might know from her campaign to get Jane Austen on the £10 note. Why do you think that was important in terms of the publicity it got and in terms of raising awareness for this overall aim of getting more women into these public spaces?
Oh, I definitely feel it was a landmark campaign, not only because it's sort of showed it sort of showed people how quickly women can become erased. I think there's a feeling that once a woman's story is in the public domain, has been recognised as an influential figure, the way Jane Austen has, that, you know, that story is always going to be available to people. But it only takes, you know, one decision to accidentally erase kind of all the women in one go. And that's exactly what was in danger of happening. So I think it kind of reminded people not to be complacent, that just because a figure might be known from your own childhood, say, you know, there may, if we don't keep fighting to keep the space we already have for women's stories, that they might disappear again. I also think it was a landmark campaign because the backlash to the decision to not have a woman on one of the notes was so intense, and I think so surprising, that it sort of showed them, I think, that people were paying attention and that they couldn't just make a mistake like that again without people getting angry, without women speaking up about it in huge numbers. So I do think it was very important. And of course, because it was a successful campaign, I think that really inspired people to sort of do the same again. We've got to keep making noise to keep women in public spaces.
You mentioned the backlash there, and that's something that I'd really love to talk about, is the debate that still surrounds all of these campaigns to either erect a statue or get a historical woman in a public place. Why do you think that these conversations do provoke such vigour and such debate?
Well, I think, I mean, the simplest way to put it is to say, I mean, our history matters and statues matter, particularly public memorials, I think, because it's a way that a society shows what it values, who it values. Something, a very high status memorial, like a public statue or a banknote, you know, it says a lot about who is important to that society. And so feelings do run high and it does matter. I think it's also something we found sometimes is that by suggesting that women's stories are included in history, there's a perception by some people, predominantly men, that that means men are going to be excluded somehow. So, for example, if we include Jane Austen, we're going to suddenly forget about Churchill or forget about, you know, Newton or Henry VIII. Like, I don't think that's how it's going to go down. What we want to do is just bring in more different, more diversity, expand history. So there's a kind of richer history that's available to everybody. It's not about taking anything away. it's about adding. And I feel that sometimes as a culture, we're used to seeing very male dominated culture. For example, in Parliament Square, it wasn't widely known that all the statues were men until, again, Caroline Criado Perez pointed it out, because we're used to seeing that. And so I think for some people to see just a little bit more representation can feel quite threatening. And I think there's sort of people do seem to get very upset about it. And I think it's a shame because actually the more stories that are out there, there's more role models for everybody. It means everybody's got someone to look up to. And that's what we should be aiming for.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
To the people who do say, well, there's an imbalance for a reason because the powerful figures in history were mostly men, what do you think is behind that?
I think it's a very simplistic view of history, to be honest, but I understand it because it's one that most of us experience at school. It's the one that's reflected to us through a lot of popular history, which is this idea of history as a sort of chain of important people and events. But I would question who gets to say whether someone is important and who's deciding which events and which achievements are important and which ones aren't. And I think history isn't a neutral process. There's a decision decision-making process there, and which has tended to privilege rich white men. And I think some of the things that possibly were very, very important at the time that a memorial was created, say, you know, somebody supported the king's army during a battle or something, people would argue whether that's actually the most interesting piece of history we could highlight today. It's a political process about who gets chosen to be remembered and who gets forgotten then as now. I would say the idea of, you know, what is important and who gets to be remembered is not simple and neutral and objective. I also think there's an argument for expanding how we commemorate individuals in history, but also how we commemorate events and movements. One of the things that was very interesting in that Institute of Historical Research discussion that you mentioned was the panel all agreed that, particularly importantly for women's history, we need to find ways of commemorating history that doesn't just focus on one individual and one act or one achievement, perhaps. Maybe recognizing that a lot of social change comes about through the work of many, many people. There may be one figurehead, but it's actually often collective action which creates change. And that is much more difficult to represent in a statue or on a plaque than the life and times of one person. I think there's some interesting artworks, public artworks, that are trying to work around this kind of very, very narrow focus on one person, one individual, and are representing groups of people. And this, I think, is particularly interesting for women because so many women are unremembered and unknown. So you've got statues like the Unknown Woman Worker in Belfast, which is two women who are kind of symbolic of women who've contributed through paid and unpaid work, but have never had any kind of particular recognition for that. There's also in Sheffield recently unveiled statues of the women steel workers during the war, and they're two women. It's a realistic statue, but they're not named individuals, and I think that's an interesting way to kind of maybe honour the people who haven't made it into those top positions, and to recognise that often what you're memorialising really is the work of many, many people rather than one person.
And I suppose we should say that this event, and of course many events happening in 2018, are marking the centenary of the Representation of the People Act, which gave the vote to some women in Britain and Ireland for the first time. And you're involved in a project at the moment about East End suffragettes. And I suppose it goes back to what you were saying about commemorating the many as well as the few figureheads. Could you talk a bit about that project and the exhibition?
Yes, I'd love to. It's actually a perfect example, because the East London Federation of the Suffragettes, which was this really interesting and unusual group within the suffragette movement that were based in East London, they did actually have a Pankhurst in their midst. They had Sylvia Pankhurst, who was their leader for their whole kind of lifespan between 1914 and 1924. You know, she is actually the kind of least known of the best known. She's one of the she's not as famous perhaps as Emmeline or Christabel Pankhurst, but she was an extraordinary woman in her own right. And what we found is that although people are starting to discover the East London suffragettes' remarkable story, they tend to focus on Sylvia, partly because she's a very charismatic individual, partly because she's a Pankhurst, so she's got the famous name, and I think partly because, you know, she was a middle-class woman who was leading a predominantly working-class movement. So actually her voice comes through the archives much more strongly than most of the other women who were involved, because, for example, she wrote two volumes of memoirs. You know, she wrote her letters. They are recorded in an archive, whereas a lot of the other women she worked with, women like Melvina Walker, Julia Skerr, Minnie Lansbury, didn't have access, didn't have opportunity, didn't have a confidence perhaps to set down their own stories in the same way that Sylvia did. So our exhibition's really trying to, although we've obviously, Sylvia's part of it, and we've sort of made a space to tell her individual story. We're trying to focus on all the kind of other women who were involved, because it was thousands of women that were members of this organization. And what they achieved is incredible. They were not only campaigning for the vote, but when the war broke out, they worked with their community to tackle the deprivation that resulted head on by through a range of kind of social enterprises, I suppose. So they opened a cooperative toy factory to provide employment for women who were out of work. They opened a nursery so that women working in the factories could leave their children somewhere safe. They opened a chain of cost price restaurants to make sure that the local, their friends and neighbours, their community could access cheap, nutritious food. So they were doing all these interesting activities. And it's really, you know, we want to focus on some of the women that people haven't heard of yet this year, and make sure they get a little time in the spotlight as well in this extraordinary year. The exhibition's on at Tower Hamlets Local History Library and Archives, and that's open from the 30th of May until the 20th of October this year.
So you've just mentioned there a wonderful exhibition that people can go to find out more. But who are some of the unknown women that you and other ongoing campaigns would like to see commemorated and would like to see included in public spaces?
Oh, well, I mean, there are so many. And obviously we're focused on East London, which is, you know, is plenty to work with. But there's, you know, stories from all around the country. And there are a couple of campaigns already. For example, Sylvia Pankhurst's statue campaign, trying to place a statue of Sylvia in Clerkenwell Green, and the Mary on the Green campaign are fighting for a Mary Wollstonecraft statue in Newington Green. And I think they're both excellent ideas. Some of the more obscure women I'd love to sort of bring to people's attention include there was a boxer called woman boxer called Annie Newton, who was one of several women boxers in Victorian England. And she started learning boxing age 10, and she began very early to fight in sort of stage fights to raise money. And she would do tricks. So, for example, her most famous trick, I'm told, was that she could punch a punching bag 900 times without missing, which is pretty amazing. And her husband passed away during the first was killed during the First World War, so she became a single mother, and she was supporting her daughter by offering boxing lessons to women and men, you know. And so, you know, a lot of people wouldn't, again, it's like the women footballers, they wouldn't necessarily think that women had been involved as athletes. And she was very famous, she was very well known at the time, but forgotten today. Another one that I'd love more people to know about is a woman called Mary Frith, who was also known as Moll Cutpurse. And she actually, again, was very famous in her day, had two plays inspired by her, one by Thomas Dekker called The Roaring Girl. And she was kind of a rogue. She wasn't a role model, but it's an example of kind of women's history in the widest sense. So not just looking for women who might be worthy to put on pedestals, which is actually, it's a lot to ask of someone to be completely without flaws. But I think we also need to look at women's history in the round, so that these are individual people, and some of them were up to some quite dodgy things. So Mary, she was a well-known thief. She started getting into trouble when she was a teenager, and her guardian decided to ship her off to America as a way to deal with the problem, and sort of managed to get her onto a ship. But as it was leaving the port of London, Mary broke free, jumped over the side of the ship and swam back into town, where she lived a life of notoriety. She was famous for dressing in men's clothing. She would smoke and drink and gamble. She was actually bet by a friend of hers that she wouldn't dare to ride on a horse from Charing Cross to Shoreditch dressed as a man. And she said, I will take that bet. I will absolutely do that. So she bought a horse. She bought herself a trumpet and a banner to wave just to show how confident she was. And she set off from Charing Cross. Apparently she got all the way to Bishopsgate before someone she describes as a plaguey wench recognized her and started shouting and drew a crowd of people who shouted at her saying, "Thou shame of women." And she got a bit worried about this and ended up going to an inn that she knew was run by someone, a friend of hers, and hiding in the inn with the horse until the crowd had gone away. And she crept out at night and then finished the ride to Shoreditch and won the bet. So there's really remarkable stories, both people that we would look up to and perhaps people we might like to steer clear of. But I think that's the thing. History is so rich. And when you actually include more voices and more perspectives, it becomes even more enjoyable.
So in terms of this wave of activism or campaigning for this public commemoration of women, it's also happening alongside global movements such as the Me Too and Time's Up movements. What do you think, is there anything owed to that, to the campaigns? Can they be linked?
Well, I feel like at the moment it's they're sort of both part of a resurgence of interest in feminism and feminist ideas. I think there's a very politicized group of young people, young women, coming up and taking from the past, taking inspiration from the past, and sort of recognizing, I think, some of the parallels. Sadly, so many of the campaigns, women's campaigns from the past, women are campaigning for exactly the same kinds of issues today. Like I mentioned before, violence against women was a problem then as now, and as with sexual harassment, it's sadly still extremely relevant. So I think there's what's happening now is a very modern, very powerful, active movement that is referring to its own history, to those lost stories, and drawing inspiration from those for the fight.
Going back to what you said about not putting these figures or these women or anyone indeed upon a pedestal, can you talk about the challenges of not judging these historical figures and picking and choosing who is commemorated with modern eyes?
Oh, absolutely. It's really difficult, I think, for one person to represent an entire group of people. And that is what the pressure that's kind of being put on the women who are now being recognised, is that they have to represent all women. For example, you know, Parliament Square, I think there's 11 statues of men and one woman now. And that woman has to represent all of us. And I think this is one of the difficulties with public memorials as they are at the moment, how something, statues and plaques, they're very, very limited in how much they can commemorate. And I think that while it's important to have conversations about who is remembered, and as I said, it's a political conversation then as now, and we need to hear all the different voices and different perspectives and the arguments, you know, for and against different people. But ultimately, I think we also need to explore alternative ways of remembering people. And so it's perhaps not just a matter of kind of public memorials in the way we're familiar with them, but, there's things like archives and museums actually offer much more opportunities to show people in the round, to recognize the context that they're in, to record the stories and voices and experiences of ordinary people, of us, of everyday people, perhaps people who didn't do something extraordinary, but had lives that can illuminate our own anyway, that we can forge a connection across history in a way through an archive, perhaps, that's easier than with a statue. I feel that sort of we need lots of different kinds of remembering, basically, to try and make sure that we're actually allowing all those different voices and experiences through, and not only focusing on this very narrow idea of history where it's only important people who did important things. Because even if we shift the definition of important slightly, or we open that gate a little wider and let maybe women in as well, maybe one woman, then we're still in danger of kind of, you know, missing the point in a way. I feel very strongly that we all contribute to history. We're making history right now, and it's important for people, I think, living their lives in the present, to know that they are making history, that their stories are just as valid as somebody who might be up on a pedestal.
given these discussions that have been happening both nationally and globally, how much further do you think we have to go?
That's a really interesting question, because it's obviously delightful this year to see so much attention being given to women's history, to public commemorations of women. I find it very inspiring, and it's also been very different to my experience up till now. What I keep questioning, though, is what happens next year? Is this going to continue? Will we be able to maintain the momentum? And I feel that while it's fantastic that a woman has finally been admitted to the statuary on Parliament Square, I feel that some of these gestures maybe, are they predicated on tokenism? What is the project? Is it to make all public statues and memorials 50-50, men and women? Or is it one or two? You know, I think... I wonder how far would be too far, if you see what I mean. So I'm really hoping that people will continue the conversations they've been having this year about not only about all the women that we should be celebrating and the women who've been forgotten, but about how we remember them and where and how many.
Well, that's fantastic. And as you said, it's a fascinating discussion. And well, thank you so much, firstly, for joining us, Sarah. It's been great talking to you.
That's great. Thank you very much for having me.
And I should say as well that to get more information on the exhibition that Sarah mentioned, you can find more at www.womenshall.org.uk, and many articles on the campaign for women's suffrage and women's history can be found at our website, historyextra.com/womenshistory.
That was Sarah Jackson. You can find out more about her work at eastendwomensmuseum.org. And if you'd like to have your say about which women from the past deserve more recognition today, then why not take part in our online poll? Head to historyextra.com/100women to take part. And just before we go, here's a message for any readers of our global history magazine, BBC World Histories. We're currently running a survey to find out what you like about this publication and what you think could be improved. And we'd love to get as much feedback as possible on this. If you do have any time to share your thoughts, please do so at historyextra.com/BBCWH survey. OK, well, that's about it for today's episode, but we'll be back on Monday to find out about the history of the national debt.
Thanks for listening to this History Extra podcast, which was produced by Jack Fletcher. Do let us know what you think about this episode by emailing podcast@historyextra.com, and we might read out your messages in future editions. Alternatively, why not keep in touch via Twitter or Facebook, where you'll find us at History Extra. For more great history content, don't forget to visit our website, historyextra.com, which is full of history articles, quizzes, image galleries, and more. Plus, it's where you can download hundreds of previous episodes of this podcast.